This Body is Someone. A Due South Story, written by Lalakhandra and read by Lutsula. The problem with being on a stakeout is that there's a lot of time to think. Even when the stakeout is taking place at the Canadian consulate's big end-of-the-year party, celebrating Canadian shoes through the years. Chaussures du Canada au fil des ans. Meg and Fraser both always say it first in the English and then the French. Franny's job is to stand near the most valuable pair and keep her eyes open for domestic terrorists who want to destroy them. It's an important job, but not an interesting one. Franny tries to keep herself alert by shifting from one leg to another and squeezing her stomach muscles, 5 seconds on and 5 seconds off, and mentally breaking down and cleaning her gun. She's still a little afraid of what the gun can do, and it still intimidates her sometimes, even though she's had it for more than 10 years. She doesn't have the Smith & Wesson with her tonight. Instead, her clutch piece is in her clutch purse. And every time Franny gets to a mental place where the gun is in pieces on the special cloth on the kitchen table, she ends up thinking about Meg and their relationship and how stupid she feels sometimes instead. Franny knows that Meg doesn't like to feel like she's being taken care of, so she doesn't ever make a big deal out of it. The days when Meg has to go into work early, Franny makes sure she's not scheduled for third shift at the 2-7, so she can get up early and make coffee and tea and bacon. Franny's even started making coffee using a French press, so that Meg doesn't scowl when she sees that Franny's boiled tea water for her. Meg spent all 46 years of her life taking care of herself. Some of those years were undercover in a terrorist cell, which Franny knows is not the charming black-and-white romance she imagines it to be, but she can't help finding it terribly exciting, especially since she's barely ever stepped foot out of Illinois. It's only been a year and a half that she's been sharing that job with Franny, and only almost 6 months sharing an apartment, so Franny doesn't take it personally. Well, she tries not to take it personally. Anyway, never mind what Ray and Ray both say. Franny's got a lot of patience, and she's willing to spend it all on Meg. It's hard, because Franny loves taking care of people, loves being the competent one who can make bacon perfectly. Thank you, George Foreman Grill, the one who makes what Meg pronounced exceedingly passable tea for an American. Thanks, Google. She wants Meg to be able to appreciate that, wants Meg to go into the consulate and brag to Fraser and Corporal Morisseau and PSC Blist about what Franny does, say in relief that she doesn't have to go to the dry cleaners for her dress uniform because Franny will pick it up on her way home from the 2-7. Franny doesn't think that Meg talks about her at work at all. Not just because Meg generally doesn't talk about her personal life with her staff, but because Meg doesn't even think it's important. And it's not important, not really, but Meg and Franny had been dating for more than a month before Fraser and Ray asked her to explain what was going on, why she was always hanging out at the consulate. Did she have a bee in her bidet for Fraser again? Bidet, bonnet, brie, what's the difference, Ray? It's all irrelevant. Franny had said. I'm only here to pick up Meg, guys, so buzz off. Their matching looks of astonishment had almost made up for the stressed-out feeling in her stomach at the realization that not only did they not know Meg and Franny had been dating since the day they'd teamed up to take down the guy pulling a fast one over the nice man who ran the corner store, demanding protection money in exchange for keeping his 6 brothers from trashing the place, but they didn't even believe Franny when she said so. You sure you ain't miscommunicating? The Ice Queen's not exactly known for being personal, Ray had said skeptically. Yeah, Franny. I can't imagine the Dragon Lady defrosting enough to. Franny had cut Ray off before he finished the sentence. Just shut up, all of you. Fraser had cleared his throat and said, I'd just like to point out that I haven't actually said. Franny had whirled around to interrupt him. All of you, she'd snapped, and stomped away to see where Meg was, since her office was empty. That time, she'd been in the Queen's bedroom with PSC Blist, debating whether the portrait of the Queen Mother cast in blue or purple was more appropriate. Franny's vote had been for the purple, which they'd ultimately went with, but she knew it wasn't because Meg had wanted to make her happy. It was because Franny's logic had been the best. Purple was just a more royal color than blue. Franny wishes Meg would just once let Franny take care of her, without getting prickly about being her own woman and being able to take care of herself. And she wishes that Meg would say, "Oh, I can't tonight. Francesca and I have a date," to people they both know, while in Franny's earshot. But aside from those two problems, Franny really does love their relationship. Meg takes Franny's work with the Chicago PD seriously, pays attention to her when she talks about problems at the office, and gives good advice, holds her hand during the scary parts of movies, and knows that sometimes the parts about women having or not being able to have children are the scary parts. Lets Franny put her cold feet on Meg's warm shins, and never complains about Sunday dinner at Mama's house, or the fact that Franny goes early to cook all the food, since Mama can't anymore. Franny's the only one who knows about Meg's secret obsession with Hardcore Logo, and that she wished she'd taken vacation time to see their reunion tour shows, but she'd felt too old for punk rock. And Meg is the only person who thinks Franny's worth anything beyond her skills at deboning a chicken. That very morning, Meg had shown up at the 2-7 and told Lieutenant Dewey that she needed Franny very specifically for this job. "Are you sure you don't want Kowalski or Vecchio to do this part?" Dewey had asked skeptically. Franny had clenched her hands into fists. She tried not to compare Dewey and Welsh, but Dewey had run away for 6 months to be a stand-up comedian, and Harding had never once implied Franny wasn't up for any task at all. "I'm sure. Detective Vecchio is the only member of your staff qualified to liaise during this particular assignment." Franny could listen all day to Meg's crisp words, the way she dropped them into her throat and practically purred, "Detective Vecchio," a totally different way of speaking than when she talked about Ray. And liaise. Oh, the French. Franny had been careful to look extra professional when she walked into Dewey's office. She irons her slacks and blouses every morning. Her anniversary of being promoted to detective was yesterday, the day before the anniversary of Meg asking if she'd like to share an apartment or perhaps a house, and she's still not at the point where she's comfortable taking either for granted. "Yes, sir?" When she poked her head in, Meg was standing near the window, tapping her foot, clad in the delicious fluvogs that Franny had bought her for Christmas. Comfortable, practical. And unless someone looked closely at the black and gold reptile print, they even looked professional. And they did amazing things for Meg's already stunning legs. "Chief Superintendent Thatcher has requested your presence at the Canadian consulate this evening," Dewey told her. "She says you're the only man, excuse me, lady, for this job." Franny had looked at Meg, but Meg had her professional face on and wasn't giving anything away, even though she knew that Franny hadn't been as closed-mouthed about their life together as she herself had been. Franny hadn't told her about the dead frogs in her locker, or the way the showers only ever had cold water, or how her paperwork was always at the bottom of some of the piles, because Meg would just make that Meg face. "Detective Vecchio." And oh, how Franny still felt thrilled every time someone said those words. "We have a unique assignment that requires some flexibility on the part of the Chicago PD. The Canadian shoewear designer, John Fluvog, has designed a pair of vegan heels encrusted with Canadian ethically mined diamonds. He's generously offered them for our Canadian Shoes Through the Years party. Chaussures du Canada au fil des ans." Franny shivered involuntarily, and Meg smiled a little. Franny couldn't help but glance down at the perfect golden black Fluvog heels again. "We've had a few threats from animal rights groups." "Sorry, what? I thought animal rights groups were for vegan shoes." Franny frowned. "Did I get that wrong somehow?" "Detective Vecchio, this is a very special animal rights group that believes animals have the right to be made into clothes." Dewey looked down at his notes. "They call themselves Animal Supply Shoes and are based in Peoria." "ASS from Peoria," repeated Franny skeptically. "Yes, Peoria," said Meg. Her tone was brisk, but her eyes had softened. Franny couldn't help but smile at her. "Well, what can I do to help?" Franny sat down in the chair next to Dewey's desk and tucked her legs comfortably underneath the chair. She still wears the shoes she walked the beat in, because they're practical and comfortable, and she tends to have to run after suspects more than the other detectives. Ray and Fraser are all there too, lurking in the background. Franny's the one standing near the shoes, though. Franny is the one wearing an elegant black evening dress, the same one she wore when Meg took her out for supper to celebrate being promoted to detective. The same one she wore when Meg said, "Francesca, I hate that we go home separately every night." The difference is that this time she's wearing a pair of pink Fluvogs supplied by John Fluvog himself. Well, by one of his assistants. Franny doesn't even think he's at the consulate, but it's basically the same thing. "It is a completely different thing, Franny," Ray had said. "Screw you, Ray," she replied. Fraser had cleared his throat, always uncomfortable with the use of profanity inside the consulate. The diamond-studded heels are gorgeous, but just not enough to keep her mind off Meg. The commotion at the front door takes her mind off Meg, though. "We are ASS," someone yells, and crashes through the security, and through Ray and Ray and Fraser, crowded around the door, and skids to a stop in front of Franny. "Yeah, I know," she says, rolling her eyes. "You're ass. Asinine, if you ask me. Step out of the way and no one has to get hurt." She's pretty sure the guy is trying to sound threatening, but he looks about 12 and is wearing a leather vest without anything underneath it. That might look good on someone else. Even Meg could pull it off, Franny's pretty sure. But this guy looks like an extra from that sci-fi show Ray likes. "How about this?" Franny suggests, trying to keep her tone rational. She has a tiny gun in her clutch purse, but doesn't want to have to pull it out. "You step back and put your hands over your head, and no one will shoot you." "Canada doesn't have any guns," shrieks the guy. He waves something at her that looks like a turkey drumstick with no meat on it. "Get out of my way, I'm gonna take down these vegan motherfuckers." "Sir, I must ask you to stop spreading false information about Canada, and also to restrain yourself from indulging in profane language in such mixed company." Meg smiles at Franny over the guy's shoulder. "Detective Vecchio, if you would." Franny digs into her clutch and pulls out her handcuffs. She sighs. "You have the right to remain silent," she tells the guy as she snaps the cuffs onto him. He doesn't even put up a fight, too busy staring wide-eyed at Meg's classic service revolver. "Anything you say can and will be held against you in a court of law." "Canadians are liars," he shrieks. Franny ignores him, finishes the Miranda speech, and shoves him at Ray and Ray. "Take this guy down to the 27," she directs, "and I'll bring Meg down later to press formal charges." But Meg cuts herself off and shakes her head, and plasters on her "I am in charge" smile. "Of course, detective." Meg never calls her Francesca in front of anyone else. Franny's heart sinks a little at detective, but she rallies. "Now that we know the shoes are safe, I'm going to go try the punch," Franny tells her, snaps her clutch shut, and stalks away. Not even the beautiful pink pumps can make her feel better, although the pomegranate cranberry rum punch makes an excellent effort. Franny lingers by the hors d'oeuvre and watches Meg calm down some of the more high-strung guests while popping crab-stuffed mushroom caps and crispy artichoke hearts. She's staying away from the sugar cookies and the shape of heels and boots, though. She doesn't want to get crumbs down her one nice dress. She takes a second glass of the rum punch and wanders over to the less expensive, less famous shoes. She stands in front of a pair of fur-lined moccasins, ignoring the placard that explains where they're from. They're cracked and old and baby-sized. Toddler-sized. Whatever. She pushes the corner of her clutch into her stomach, right in the hollow place, where it always hurts when she thinks about babies. It doesn't matter. Meg probably wouldn't want children anyway, and Franny's too old already. And Franny wouldn't want to have kids with Meg. Meg would probably not even let them call her mom in public. Franny's been over Fraser for a long time, but she still thinks he'd make a good father. He has the genes for it, even if he doesn't have the innate skill. Meg confessed once that she'd thought she and Fraser would parent a child, but it hadn't worked out, and she was thankful for that. "It would have been a huge mistake," Meg had told her, curled up around her in bed. "And I never would have gotten to have you." True enough, although, Franny doesn't know why Meg even cares about having her, since Meg's on the other side of the room, laughing with an older man. Franny takes another sip of her rum punch and moves to the next exhibit. Mukluks that belong to Fraser's dad. famous for being killed while standing up for the rights of the inhabitants of the land, facing down big business to protect the wilderness. There's dark droplets on them. It takes Franny a few moments to realize it's blood. The guy from ASS was such a letdown. Franny's used to everything being kind of crappy all the time, but she really does enjoy being a detective most of the time. She also enjoys that she beat both race scores on the exam. Sibling rivalry, she figures. She had Harding helping her study, but she had to take the test herself, so she's happy to give herself most of the credit. Once she's finished her second glass of punch, she's out of stuff to look at on this side of the room, and she doesn't really want to go over to the other side. She doesn't want to put herself in a position where Meg's going to call her detective again, and she doesn't want to start a fight with Meg in the middle of a fancy party. She just wants to go home, really, and curl up on the couch with some hot chocolate and watch late-night movies until she falls asleep. Meg could be there or not, as she likes. Not true. Franny really wants Meg to be there. She sighs and heads over to the other side of the room. Meg will be pressing charges, and Franny might as well return the pink shoes, slip back into her plain black pumps, and head to the 27 to start the paperwork. Meg had been circulating, talking to each guest, but she's back with the old man again. His hair is much longer than RCMP regulation, but he's still in the red uniform, and Meg is smiling a genuine, "I like you" smile at him. As she approaches, Franny pastes a smile onto her face, and pushes the negative thoughts about breakups and finding a new apartment or moving home to live with Mama out of her head. Times like this, Franny does not feel 45 years old, but 20 again, newly divorced and shaky. Chief Inspector, she says quietly, can I speak to you for a moment? Oh, Francesca, Meg beams at her, and it's, startlingly, her at-home, relaxing and private smile. First, let me introduce you to Deputy Commissioner Lou Montgomery. He was my mentor all through training and my first years of service. Almost retired now, booms the man and sticks out his hand. Call me Lou. Detective Francesca Vecchio, Franny says, and shakes his hand. It's warm and big and comforting. She can't imagine this man and Meg getting along. He's so jolly. Francesca and I, Meg begins, and Franny waits for yet another denial that they're together. But Meg says, have been together for 18 months. Meg checks her watch. In 15 minutes. Oh, Maggie. Maggie? I'm so happy for you, booms Lou. You always did like the pretty ones. He turns to Franny. And I can tell you're good for Maggie. She's always had a stick up her butt. Lou, hisses Meg, but her cheeks are pink, and there's a tiny smile curving her mouth. When she turns to look at Franny, her dangling earrings swing against her cheeks. Lou thinks it's still his job to give me a hard time, but I couldn't not introduce you. She looks at Franny from under her eyelashes. Lou's the closest thing I've ever had to a father. It's my pleasure to meet you, Franny tells him, grasping desperately for words. She thought she and Meg were going to break up, but instead Meg introduces her to, basically, her father. Are you in town for long? Just a few weeks, Lou tells her. I'm hoping Meg will unbend a little and come out drinking. I make a mean amaretto coffee, says Franny, feeling daring. Maybe you'd like to come over for supper one night. Living together, huh? Lou raises his eyebrows at Meg, who is blushing. Lou, come on, we're in public. Meg glances around, but she doesn't look angry. Meg has a pathological need for privacy. Franny grins at Lou, even when Meg grumbles. I do not. I just don't like everyone knowing things about me. She's always been like that, Lou sympathizes. Took me almost the whole training period to get her to unbend enough to let my wife make her dinner. It took me almost 3 months to get her to go out with me, and we'd known each other for more than 13 years. Franny runs a finger down Meg's arm, letting her nail scratch the skin just a little. But it worked out okay. 3 months? Repeats Meg. But you didn't ask me out until... Yeah, I figured you weren't getting the hint. Well, Fraser figured. He told me that even though people had been telling me to be more subtle and ladylike my whole life, you're an upfront kind of woman, so I finally just went for it. Franny shrugs and winks at Lou. I never expected her to say yes. And it's been 18 months since then? Lou looks from Franny to Meg. Why are you here? Work is important to both of us, says Meg, and she sounds incredibly defensive. And we just need to be together, says Franny, and for the first time really feels it. Meg's not ashamed of her, just private. And what does it matter if Meg calls her Francesca at work? Franny tucks the revelation away in her brain for further examination at a later date and tunes back into what Meg is saying. Sergeant Fraser and Detectives Kowalski and Vecchio to fill out the paperwork. Meg's fingers are cold on Franny's wrist. That way we can make good use of these clothes and celebrate. Corporal Morisot and P.S.C. Blist agreed to take care of winding down the party. Franny stays very still, while Meg's fingers stroke the inside of her wrist and then move away. Is that why you were so pissy earlier? Franny bites back her tongue as soon as she says it, but can't take the words back. Meg looks rueful. I thought you were mad at me when you said we'd go to the 2-7. Oh, young love, says Lou. He strokes his chin like the mall Santa Clauses of Franny's childhood stroked their beards. It's nice to have staff you can trust, eh, Meggie? I'll never forgive you for not taking Turnbull back when I asked. There's a bite to Meg's voice, but her smile belies it. I can't tell you what a relief Corporal Morisot has been after that fiasco. Also, Michelle is nice, puts in Franny. She shifts her weight. All the fuss about Fluvogs isn't fuss at all, apparently. They really are the most comfortable heels she's ever worn. Ladies, do not let me keep you from celebrating your anniversary. Lou rocks back on his heels and grins and winks. As long as that invitation for dinner is really open, I'll be the first one to shoo you away. Well, we still have some time, Franny tells him. I have to return the shoes and call the precinct. Meg's cold fingers skim her wrist again and land on her hand. And then they're holding hands. In public. In front of people. Franny holds her breath. You get to keep the shoes, says Meg. And can't you call your brother from the car? Franny squeezes her hand. Of course. Lou, says Meg, and busses his cheek with hers without letting go of Franny's hand. I think Francesca and I will be off. I'll call you tomorrow about dinner. Lou kisses Franny's cheek and squeezes her shoulders, and then they're gone, shrugging into winter coats and slinging on scarves and stepping out into the cold Chicago night, snowflakes drifting lazily to melt into their hair. Meg doesn't dye over the silver streaks, and they make her look like she has stripes of snow glinting under the streetlights. Meg holds open the passenger side door for Franny. You held my hand in public, Franny says. You introduced me as your partner. Meg wrinkles her nose and turns on the car. I think we're a little old to be girlfriends, don't you? No, partner is fine. I thought you didn't want anyone to know. Franny stares out the window while Meg puts the car in gear and pulls out onto the street. It's not even 10 o'clock, but the neighborhood is empty, their tires the only tracks in the snow. What are you talking about? Everyone knows. You're listed as my next of kin with the RCMP, says Meg mildly as she turns east. I just don't think it's appropriate to talk about all the time, like your brother and his wife, or Ray and Sergeant Fraser. It just feels like I embarrass you sometimes, or... Wait, I'm your next of kin? Of course you are. Do you not want to be? Meg glances over at her, and Franny looks away. She's chewing all her lipstick off her mouth. Hopefully it won't stick to her teeth and make her look cheap. Of course I want to be, she finally says. But I want you to hold my hand sometimes, too. She trails off and feels stupid. Francesca, Meg sighs. You have to talk to me. She glides to a stop at a red light and puts a hand on Franny's knee. Her hands are colder than usual from the steering wheel, but it feels good. Franny slouches a little, so Meg's hand slides up her leg. ignoring the way it makes a seatbelt dig into her ribs. "I'm not good with talking about my emotions," Meg finishes. "If you feel something, I need you to tell me, so that we can communicate." "I don't want you to break up with me for being needy," Franny confesses, still staring out the window. The light turns green, and Meg drives through it, but she keeps her hand on Franny's thigh. "I don't want you to break up with me for being the ice queen," replies Meg, and even though there's a hint of amusement, mostly Franny hears pain. She puts her hand over Meg's and squeezes it. "I never call you that," she tells Meg. "I love you." Meg squeezes her thigh a little, and her fingers slide higher. "I love you too," she says, and glances at Franny, smiling. "But you have to wait until we're home." Her fingers brush Franny's lacy panties, and then she pulls them away, sitting up straighter in her seat. The car speeds up a little, and Franny huffs out a breath of frustration. When they pull up in front of their tiny house, Meg turns off the car and unbuckles her seatbelt, but doesn't open her door. "I'm cold, Meg," Franny says. Why she thought bare legs in Chicago in December was a good idea that afternoon, she's not sure. "Yeah, but..." Meg leans over the console in the center, tucks her hand into Franny's hair to pull them closer, and brushes their mouths together. Franny is struck stupid. It's the first time they've ever kissed outside, not counting Meg's office with the door closed. Meg kisses her carefully, coaxing her into kissing back, her tongue soft against Franny's. Franny lets her eyes close, one hand clutching Meg's wrist and the other on her leg, sliding up her pencil skirt to touch her leg above the wide band of her stocking. Meg's hands are always cold, but between her legs she's always on fire, always ready for Franny. Franny pulls back and says, "Let's go inside. We can practice communicating." The sound of Meg's laughter echoes through the car, and she's still laughing when Franny tugs her inside the house, pushes her against their front door, and kisses her. The end. I'm Lutzila, and thank you for listening. This has been a reading of This Body is Someone by Lalakhandra. You can find more of the author's works at lalakhandra.dreamwidth.org. The spelling is LALEJANDRA. And you can find more of my podfic at lutzila.dreamwidth.org.